Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Two major banks are pulling their money out of Florida's school voucher program. Both Wells Fargo and Fifth Third Bank say they will no longer donate to Step Up for Students. The timeshare company Wyndham Destinations also says it is stopping its donations to this program.
Now, this program is paid for by corporate donations. The companies get a tax credit in Florida by giving money to the state for these education scholarships. An Orlando Sentinel investigation found that 156 private Christian schools with alleged anti-LGBTQ views educated more than 20,000 students around Florida with tuition paid for by state scholarships. Of those schools, 83 refused to admit LGBTQ students or would expel them if their sexual orientation or gender identity were discovered, according to the reporting.
We're starting the Florida Roundup this Friday with a closer look at the Orlando Sentinel investigation into Step Up for Students as we welcome reporter Annie Martin. She's joining us from WMFE Studios. Annie, thanks so much for being on the Florida Roundup.
Thank you for having me.
And here's our question to callers all over the state. What's your reaction to news that major banks and another company say they'll no longer donate to the state's school voucher program, Step Up for Students, because of allegations of discrimination? Give us a call. It's 305-995-1800. Tweets to @FloridaRoundup. So, Annie, the Sentinel investigation found more than 150 schools in Florida taking voucher funds. Your reporting shows had anti-gay policies. What kinds of policies or curriculum are causing these banks and other companies to pull out of Step Up for Students?
Well, when we say anti-gay policies, what we mean is sort of a broad swath of policies we found in school handbooks and on school websites that indicate gay students would either be expelled or not admitted or would not feel very welcome there if they were to attend. In some cases, simply saying, I'm gay or I'm attracted to people of the same sex would get you expelled from these schools. In other cases, the schools had statements of belief that said things like homosexuality is a sin. So we've spent about 6 months looking at handbooks from schools across the state. There's about 2,000 schools in Florida that take vouchers. And we looked at hundreds and if not thousands of handbooks for these schools. And I think it's important to note that not every school makes its policies available to the public online. Some of these schools don't put their handbooks or other policies in places where the public can view them. So it's impossible to know whether there might be others that have these types of policies.
Can you tell us a little?
But we found, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead. But what we found is there were more than 150 that had anti-gay views of some type that we could find on their website or policy.
Can you explain to listeners a little bit more about how the school voucher program works in funneling money to private schools? The state constitution essentially bans taxpayer money going toward religious institutions, but there's a workaround, isn't there?
Well, there's five programs right now, and the largest, the Florida Tax Credit Scholarship Program, basically relies on companies that get dollar-for-dollar tax credits in return for their contributions. So basically, instead of sending money to the state's general fund, they get a, they send money to a nonprofit organization that administers a scholarship, and they get a tax credit for that. There are other programs that serve students with disabilities or those who are bullied in public schools, and three of those rely on money from the general fund. So there's five different programs, and the rules are a little bit different for each.
Got it. And let's talk about the actions from the banks. The statement from Wells Fargo saying they will no longer support Step Up for Students because Wells Fargo values diversity and inclusion and opposes discrimination. A similar statement from Fifth Third Bank, saying they will not contribute until more inclusive policies have been adopted by all participating schools to protect the sexual orientation of all students. And the company Wyndham Destinations, a hospitality company here in Florida, making a similar move. These companies are pulling millions of dollars out of the voucher program. Has there been a response to the Orlando Sentinel about this from anyone in Tallahassee at the Department of Education or the state legislature?
Well, there have been a couple of bills filed, one in the Florida House and one in the Florida Senate, that would ban this type of discrimination in schools that take vouchers. However, it's not clear that either of those pieces of legislation are going to gain any traction this year. And in fact, past proposals have failed. So, it'll be interesting to see whether, there's any kind of traction this year. You might have seen the Sun Sentinel did a story, and actually the Orlando Sentinel and the Sun Sentinel did a story that ran in today's paper, and Senator Manny Diaz, who's a pretty powerful player up there, made it pretty clear that he wasn't interested in any kind of legislation that would ban anti-gay discrimination. So we'll just have to wait and see.
We'll go to your calls here on the Florida Roundup in just a moment. The number to join us is 305-995-1800. Other companies have donated to step up for students, like Geico Waste Management. Does the actions of the major banks place pressure on other companies to follow suit, do you think? Also stop contributing or not?
Well, it could. And I think it's important to note that many of these companies have policies that would ban discrimination within their own companies. They say they make employment decisions, for example, regardless of sexual orientation or gender identity, or they sponsor or participate in events like Orlando's Come Out with Pride events. So publicly, they're very very supportive of the gay and lesbian community and have their policies for their own company that would ban this type of discrimination within the company.
These corporate giants, for years now, financial institutions in particular, have had policies in place that are the opposite of some of the schools they'd been indirectly donating to when it comes to LGBTQ employees or inclusion and diversity. Your investigation at the Orlando Sentinel found that these were essentially write-offs, these donations to step up for students, correct?
Yeah, companies that contribute to the tax credit scholarship program, and there are a couple of scholarship organizations that administer this program, they get dollar for dollar tax credits. So essentially, they're diverting money that they would have paid in taxes to be spent on scholarships for low-income students.
And so as you hear about this as well, I'm curious to ask you what you're hearing from teachers and parents of students that might have been affected by some of these allegedly discriminatory policies. What are they saying to you and your colleagues at the Orlando Sentinel?
Well, my colleague Leslie Postal interviewed a couple in Vero Beach whose children was actually, they were turned away from a school that they had previously attended because their mother was now in a same-sex relationship. Their mother had been married to a man when they first attended the Master's Academy in Vero Beach. But when their mom tried to re-enroll them there, after she was in a relationship with another woman, the school told them no. And the reason given was that their mom was in a same-sex relationship. And I think that was a surprise to this couple because they didn't realize that a school that was taking voucher money and participating in a state program could discriminate like this, and it can. There's no laws in Florida that would prohibit that kind of discrimination.
And let us know what you think about this, Florida, as we talk about this on the Florida Roundup. The number to join us, 305-995-1800.
And let's start in DeLand, Florida. Susan on line 5. Go ahead, Susan, you're on the radio.
I just don't understand. Is it because there's no federal legislation that has LGBTQ identity as a protected category that the state can actually, use funds or a tax credit system and discriminate against some of its own citizens and their children because of their sexual orientation or identity, gender identity?
Susan, great question. Annie, help navigate through this and kind of follow the funds and follow these questions about these discriminating policies.
Yeah, Susan is right. There are no federal laws or state laws in Florida that protect against discrimination against LGBTQ people. And so that's why these schools are allowed to have these types of policies.
In Delray Beach, Kate on line one. Go ahead, Kate. You're on the radio now.
Hi. My son has autism, and I pulled him from school, and we got the scholarship. We had the Gardner Scholarship, which is part of Step Up. And once I was involved in it, I did find it really odd that people could use the money to go to a religious school or buy homeschool material that was religiously affiliated, because I thought the money did come and that there should be a separation between, you know, mm-hmm. money going to churches mm-hmm. and money going to religious institutions versus money going for education.
Yeah. Kate, thanks for that. Annie, how did this kind of program evolve into these public dollars having the potential flowing to these essentially religious organizations?
Yeah, well, I mean, most of the schools that participate in these programs are religious, and I think that would come as a surprise to people, but that's allowed. You know, private schools are allowed to participate in these programs, even if they're religious, and even if they have policies that say, you know, you must agree to a statement of faith, or you have to share our religious views in order to enroll your child here. So that's something that's currently allowed under the current rules.
Michael in Duval County. Michael on line four. There you go. Hey, Mike, go ahead.
Hey, good job, Orlando Sentinel. Free press, love it. First, Manny Diaz has made himself the point here, and he's turning choice on its head. Imagine if people could say, well, we can turn you away on the basis of your race, and you can just go find another choice, which is what Manny Diaz is saying about the discriminatory aspects of these schools. Second, there's a bill moving through the legislature now that's going to allow Step Up for schools to have audits every 3 years instead of every 1 year. And then finally, quickly, I was really shocked reading the Sentinel articles that so much money has been put into this program by the liquor lobby. What's up with that? Thank you so much.
Michael, three great questions. Annie, we'll tackle these in the order that Michael posed them. Senator Manny Diaz, a longtime state representative, now state senator, as you mentioned, very powerful when it comes to education funding and budgets and policy, as he is the leader of the state Senate Education Committee. Michael's comment perhaps went further than what Senator Diaz has actually said, but help kind of navigate the role of Senator Diaz, a Miami-Dade senator, in regards to the expansion of this particular scholarship program.
Well, and I would like to say I do think that there are a lot of people out there who share his views. They feel like, you know, people who get this scholarship, if their child won't be served at a particular school because they're gay or because the parents are gay, they can go someplace else. Like, that's, you know, we've gotten a lot of feedback about this story, and mm-hmm. that's not in common view. But basically, Manny Diaz, he's the chair of the Senate Education Committee, and, you know, he's a power player in Tallahassee especially with regard to education-related policies. And so he has a lot of sway here.
And certainly with school choice and the continued debate around the role of charter schools and public schools and navigating between those two. Michael also had a question about the audits that the state regulations have for these programs, these state tax credit funded scholarship programs, moving from each year to 3 years. What's the potential impact there?
Yeah, and basically that would just mean that they have to submit to a financial audit not as often as they do now, you know, and that doesn't really have to do with this particular issue. That's just...
Would a financial audit catch these kinds of policies?
Well, I mean, I don't think that would really address this issue, because, you know, sending scholarships to schools that don't serve LGBTQ students and their families, I mean, that's allowed under the state law of Florida. So I think that's kind of, you may disagree with that, but I think that's a separate issue from what we're talking about today.
Michael from Duval County had a final question regarding participating companies. And in his estimation, lots of representatives from the liquor industry. Were you able to look at the source of the tax credit funding of these scholarships and see what kind of industries it's coming from?
Well, here's the thing. The names of the companies that contribute and the dollar amounts of their contributions are not subject to public record. However, Step Up for Students, which is the main nonprofit organization that distributes these scholarships, puts out press releases as well as an annual report that lists the names of many of the companies that donate. So we've been able to glean some of that information here. And yes, that's true. Liquor and beverage distributors do make up a significant portion of the contributions. Mm. And I think we included a number in our story, and it was, I'm looking through our story because I don't want to misspeak, but it was definitely a majority of the dollars that have gone to this company in the last few years came from those types of companies. Hmm. And it's because the state laws allow dollar for dollar write-offs on tax bills for certain types of taxes.
Yeah.
And you know, the one of the main types of companies that would pay those types of taxes is the liquor distributors.
It may be more valuable for different industries than for others. Tom in Tallahassee, you are on the radio now. Thanks for calling in, Tom. Go ahead.
Hey, I worked for DOE for 30 plus years, and the Orlando Sentinel done
DOE, the Department of Education in Florida.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah, and the Sentinel has done an excellent job, not only on these programs, but also on the charter schools, because this has cost the state of Florida hundreds of millions of dollars. One point I wanted to make, there are, I believe, in the last governor's election, something like 800,000 African-American women registered to vote. 700,000 of those women voted for Andrew Gillum. The other 100,000 are women who, because they receive funding for these programs for their churches and the schools they run. And, of course, Andrew lost by very much less than 100,000 votes. Had they voted, obviously, for him, it would have been different. So, yes, people have an agenda and they have interests. And it's their, you know, their right to vote as they see fit. But again, the reason they voted the way they did was because of these programs. And
how do you know that, Tom?
Well, when you look at 800,000 people, and overwhelmingly 90%+ vote one way and the others another way, you know that when you look at the demographics, when you look at age, et cetera, and having worked, like I said, for the Department of Education, mm-hmm. You could see the names of the schools, and there are many, many small religious, all-black schools that receive funds through these programs. So like I said, they have a vested interest in supporting these programs.
Tom, we're coming up on a break here. Let me get real quick to Annie Martin to respond to what you're hearing from Tom. Is that analysis spot on in your experience, Annie?
Well, I think, and I don't want to comment on the, you know, why people voted for Andrew Gillum or why they didn't, but it is true that a lot of the schools that participate in this program are very small. You know, they serve, 100 or fewer students, or they have 100 or fewer scholarship students, and they rely very heavily or totally on the scholarships for their revenue. And a lot of these places are, operate out of churches, like the existing
That's
church
right. and,
decided
and,
to build
And I want
to
jump in and say, we want your tweets on this to @FloridaRoundup and your calls at 305-995-1800 as we continue the conversation in a moment here on the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for being with us this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. We're talking about the Step Up for Students scholarship program. Companies make donations to that program, which the state uses for private school vouchers. An Orlando Sentinel investigation found dozens of private schools with anti-gay policies and practices have received millions of dollars of the scholarship money. At least three companies here as we speak on this Friday have since announced they will no longer support the scholarships. 305-995-1800. That's our statewide phone number. Do you have experience with these private school vouchers? Perhaps you live in a neighborhood or community with these schools. Perhaps you have benefited. You have taken advantage of these scholarship funds, or maybe belong to a company that is part of the donation process. 305-995-1800 or tweets at Florida Roundup. Let's go back to your phone calls here. Tom in Cocoa Beach on line four. Go ahead, Tom. You're on the radio now.
Hello. I am a retired professor of education. I have studied the voucher programs across the country since Wisconsin was the first. That's my home state. The voucher programs are quite similar across the whole state. But the elephant in the room, besides this discrimination, is what kind of curriculum is being promoted through voucher programs. Now, you're missing, there are two voucher programs in Florida. The most recent one is called the Family Empowerment Program. And that gives people at a certain poverty level direct money to use for private schools. Just in Brevard County itself, there are 47 parochial schools that could benefit from this. I think what people have to look at is the curriculum of these schools. And I'm going to recommend a source. A woman by the name of Rachel Tabashnik, has studied the curriculum of voucher schools across the country. I would encourage everybody to get online and look at her studies and see what kind of programs are being promoted through these voucher programs. I'll just make it short. They're anti-science. Well, they do not believe in science.
Tom, there's a curriculum question here, right? And the Orlando Sentinel investigation really focused on the policy question, admittance policy and student conduct policy questions.
Yes.
I would. Do you not agree those are perhaps just as important as curriculum?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But and beyond that, they have to look at the curriculum. Florida just spent millions of dollars defining new standards for public schools. They will not be. They will not apply to the private schools.
Okay.
So those high level standards will be, if you will, dismissed at the private schools unless they choose to use them. And many of the parochial schools do not choose. In other states, did not choose to use those kinds of standards for their program.
Tom, we got it. Thanks for that insight and that information there from Cocoa Beach. 305-995-1800, our statewide phone number.
And tweet us at Florida Roundup as we talk about the Orlando Sentinel investigation into the state's voucher program. Major financial institutions say they'll no longer donate to the program, given that the Sentinel found some schools taking taxpayer money apparently were discriminating against LGBTQ kids. Jim is on the line in Spring Hill. Hi, Jim. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So, this is a couple of things. I think that the people of the state of Florida, if they're not happy with what's happening, they need to go out and vote and get rid of these people that are telling schools and other things that they can discriminate against gay, lesbians, and transgender. As a gay person, I find it to be the most horrific experience of my life when I moved to Florida, when I found out all the things that they can discriminate against you down here. School is the worst because every kid needs an education to improve themselves and lift themselves up out of whatever situation they're in.
And, you know, Jim, why don't you tell me a little bit more about your personal experience as a gay man in Florida?
Oh, it's been crazy. I moved down here 2 years ago from a state that I thought was worse than Florida, which was Utah. And when I got down here, I took a job and was fired shortly thereafter because they found out I was gay. You know, just people yell things at you, catcall at you out their window. I mean, it's pretty discouraging.
I'm sorry to hear that, Jim. I really am. And, you know, we do need to note that although a number of cities around the country have passed local ordinances banning discrimination against anyone on the basis of their sexual orientation or gender identity. There is no statewide policy, Tom, in place as yet, although there have been some moves in the legislature to change that. But that's something to note as well.
Let's bring State Representative Carlos Guillermo Smith in to the conversation. He's a Democrat representing District 49. He joins us from WMFE in Orlando. Representative, welcome to the Florida Roundup. You planned on speaking with the Education Commissioner, Richard Corcoran, on Thursday. Were you able to have that meeting? And if so, what can you tell us about the topic of conversation?
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you, Tom, for having me on for this really, really important discussion. We have been advocating for quite some time for there to be some accountability in our schools, our private school voucher system in the state of Florida, but specifically and especially around the issue of discrimination against gay and transgender students. Last night, I actually joined Representative Ana Escamani, also of Orlando, to have a conversation with Commissioner Corcoran about how we can resolve this issue and fix this issue. What we heard from the commissioner was that there were folks on staff at the Department of Education who were reviewing this issue, that they were looking for possible policy changes that could not only end the discrimination against gay and transgender students at the schools who receive these vouchers, but he said he wanted to do it in a way that respected First Amendment freedoms as well, which I understand. But my takeaway from that, Tom, was that the commissioner is taking this issue seriously, and he understands that if he doesn't stop the bleeding as it relates to the withdrawal of corporate sponsorships from the program, then the financial integrity of the program is at risk.
Representative, what kind of specifics did you receive from the commissioner regarding those changes in practice and policies that he speaks about?
Well, I can tell you about some of the specifics that we shared that we would like to see happen. What we need to see is we need to see a policy change that says we will not send voucher money to private schools that have a written policy that bases student enrollment on someone's sexual orientation or gender identity, whether that be the student's sexual orientation or gender identity or the parent. That has to be done away with, and we are laser focused on making sure that change happens.
What agency needs to make that change?
Well, the Department of Education needs to direct the SFOs, also known as the scholarship funding organizations, right, who run these scholarship programs, to make that policy change. We have heard from some of the SFOs that they need guidance from the department.
So it's not the department that you're requesting to have that policy in place. It's you're requesting the department to demand the scholarship funding organizations to have those policies in place. Is that right?
Well, they could be one and the same. I mean, the department can establish the policy and they can direct the SFOs to implement that policy. It can also happen legislatively. We understand what the legislative challenges are in a Republican-led legislature that has been hesitant, for lack of a better term, to address issues related to LGBTQ Floridians, much to the detriment, by the way, of our community. And so if we can get the Department of Education to help implement this change, I mean, as long as the policy is changed and we're protecting students, I don't care how it happens.
But, well, you want it to be enforceable, certainly, and to have some kind of accountability behind it, I imagine, representatives.
Absolutely.
And so what kind of reception did that specific policy request? Did you make that policy request to the Education Commissioner, Richard Corcoran?
Yes.
You did.
Yes.
And the response was?
He was receptive. I mean, he understands what's at stake.
Okay.
But I'm not naive enough to think that I'm aware of the fact that often when these issues become hot and they snowball because of reporting, because of public pressure, if we do not take care of this change in this legislative session, they will move on once the public has forgotten about this issue and no change will happen, which is why it's important that we do this right now.
Are Florida laws being violated in this practice?
I believe so, because It is every individual's constitutional right to not be discriminated against, no matter where they are, whether it's in a school, whether it's at work, whether it's in housing or in public accommodations. Obviously, this is a very broad issue, but you cannot expel a student based on their sexual orientation or gender identity and not run foul of the Constitution.
Those schools that the Orlando Sentinel identified and found in their investigation to be following those practices, will there be a target of legal action? Can they be a target of legal action if you're saying they're violating the constitutional rights of those students?
They potentially can be. And we've seen we've seen litigation when it comes to anti-LGBTQ discrimination in other areas of policy, most commonly in employment. But I want to also make sure that your listeners understand it's not only about the overt discrimination in writing that says that gay and trans students can be expelled. The way that some of these schools have written their student handbook code of conduct policies is they've also said that, for example, it would be a class one violation that is expellable to be gay or trans, but it's a class two or class three violation of student conduct to damage school property, to cheat, to lie, to physically or verbally bully another student. And just think about the message that that sends. What they are saying, using taxpayer resources as they're trying to educate our children, they are saying it is worse to be gay or trans than it is to be a liar, a cheater, or a criminal.
Representative Guillermo
Smith, which is why they don't deserve taxpayer funding.
Where is the line on this taxpayer money for scholarships? We had a caller earlier who was pointing into curriculum, not just policies, not just enrollment practices, but curriculum. For instance, should scholarship money go toward a school teaching creationism?
Well, there's no question that the level of accountability for private schools that receive these vouchers leaves a lot to be desired. There is no accountability. We have no idea what they're teaching. We have no idea what they're telling these kids. None of what they are doing is subject to public record. So it's not only that we need to prohibit discrimination in these schools as a necessary policy change, but we also have to look at their curriculum and we have to enact some standards. While it's not the rule, we have found that there are schools that are teaching students that humans walked this earth with dinosaurs. And
are you
receiving taxpayer money? That's absurd and it's ridiculous.
In addition to the LGBTQ discriminatory practices that have been found in this investigation for the Orlando Sentinel, and your intent on having formal policies in place for the State Education Commission, are you also requesting that kind of curriculum look?
We are absolutely asking for there to be more accountability and transparency, and we need to raise the academic standards as well. Now, is that part of our very narrow focus at this moment to make sure that gay and trans students are not being discriminated against? It's certainly part of the conversation, but it is also a broader conversation that I know is going to take some time, which, by the way, they're trying to rush through. I mean, to your point in a previous segment, you're talking about a voucher bill that's moving through right now that makes them even less accountable. So trust me, when I see that bill on the floor, we will be having all of these conversations.
State Representative, stand by here. We are speaking with Carlos Guillermo Smith, Democrat State Representative from District 49, and you are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
Lots of tweets and calls coming into the show. Jonah tweets the Florida Roundup. These voucher schools are shaming and demonizing these students' identities. These policies are akin to child abuse. He believes they need to be treated as such. Here's a tweet from Wendy. What percentage of the total step up for students' funding does this withdrawal represent? How will it affect the current recipients? That's a question we'll ask of Annie Martin at the Orlando Sentinel in just a minute. But first, let's go to Max at the Villages. Hi, Max. You're on the radio. What are your thoughts?
Hello. I wanted to ask, do local ordinances, do they have, is it an option for them to override these schools or require that they don't discriminate?
Thanks for that. Annie Martin of the Orlando Sentinel, could you answer Max's question? I believe the answer is no, but what can you tell him?
Well, that's a legal question that I don't feel very well equipped to ask, but to answer. But what I can say is that, you know, in the state of Florida, there's no law that prohibits this type of discrimination at this point. And that's a good question. To be honest, I don't know if the city of Orlando or, you know, some other municipality has a law in the books that says no anti-LGBTQ
right.
discrimination, how that would affect a school in this program. Yeah.
And how about this tweet from Wendy? How will the withdrawal of the money from Wells Fargo, Fifth Third, affect some of these schools that are taking the voucher funds?
Well, I think it's important to keep in mind that the companies that have said that they will withdraw at this point are relatively small contributors to the general pot. Fifth Third Bank sent $5.4 million in 2018 to the program. That's a pretty small percentage of the overall number. And as somebody pointed out earlier, and I didn't have the number right in front of me, at that time, but I do now, and I wanted to remind folks, the lion's share of the contributions for this program have come from the hospitality and alcoholic beverage industries, and they have kicked in combined $2.3 billion, which amounts to almost $400,000 scholarships since the program's inception. And overall, corporations have given more than $3.9 billion since the program began in 2001. $5.4 million, while that's a significant amount of money, and while I think having companies come forward and say we're no longer contributing to this is significant in the grand scheme of the, you know, total dollar amount of the scholarships, it's relatively small.
Relatively small, but certainly caught a lot of attention. We'll continue to follow this issue, and we want to thank you so much for appearing on the Florida Roundup this Friday. She's Annie Martin of the Orlando Sentinel. She and Leslie Postal conducted this investigation into the school's voucher, or the state's, rather, voucher program. Annie, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break, and in a moment, are you ready for the Super Bowl on Sunday? This year, the big game is going green down at Hard Rock Stadium in Miami. We'll explain in a moment here on the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks again for listening this week to Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, how about this? The NFL is going green this Sunday for Super Bowl 54 in Miami as the 49ers take on the Chiefs at Hard Rock Stadium, Tom, down in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, 70,000 people will be jammed into the stadium, hundreds of millions of people, literally hundreds of millions of people in the United States, and, you know, upwards of a billion people ultimately will be exposed to the Super Bowl. And listen, the people in the stadium generating a lot of trash, certainly. The league hopes to make this Super Bowl, though, sustainable, and it's also the first Super Bowl, Super Bowl 54. It's the first one with an official ocean sponsor. How do you like that?
Hey, makes sense here in Florida, right?
It does, but listen, this is the 11th time it's been in Miami, but it's the first time the ocean gets its own sponsor. J.P. Brooker is the senior manager and policy counsel for Ocean Conservancy's Florida Conservation Program. J.P., you've been involved with this process from day one. The Ocean Conservancy is the official partner for the local Super Bowl host committee. The ocean gets an official sponsor at the Super Bowl. How's this work?
Yeah, it's part of the greater Oceans to Everglades initiative that we conjured up with the Everglades Foundation to highlight the links and connections between these one-of-a-kind, magnificent South Florida ecosystems that we have here. Miami Gardens, where the Hard Rock Stadium is sandwiched between the Everglades and the ocean. And, you know, both of those ecosystems interact with one another in unique, one-of-a-kind ways, and we wanted to use this as a platform to highlight those connections.
As I mentioned, this is the 11th time the game has been in Miami. So for those first 10 games, the Everglades and the ocean were also here for those games.
That's right.
So why now?
Well, better late than never, I think. And, you know, I think, you know, there have been charitable causes associated with Super Bowls in the past, and this is the first time that we've decided to use the environment as a topic to highlight. And I think that's really because of what we're seeing here on the water in Florida. I'm a sixth-generation Floridian. I've been born and raised in Florida. I've never seen the types of harmful algal blooms, for example, that we've had because of Lake Okeechobee discharges through the Caloosahatchee and St. Lucie rivers. So water quality is at the forefront of Floridians' minds, and I think this is a great opportunity to talk about these issues.
Everything with the Super Bowl comes with a price tag, a lot of focus on a 30-second television commercial. What about the cost of this partnership?
I mean, everything comes with a cost, but I think it's incredibly valuable if you can get your message out there. There are ways to offset your costs by bringing in corporate sponsorships and things like that. But I think at the end of the day, what we want is for Floridians to have increased awareness about these issues and for Americans and an international audience to know that Florida is facing unprecedented environmental challenges, and we need to act now to fix it.
You alluded to another question I'm going to ask next, which is who's the intended audience of this, but how many zeros are in that partnership deal for the Ocean Conservancy?
I couldn't tell you the actual figure. At the end of the day, you have to get with my accountant, but I know it's not cheap. You know, I mean, you know, we've invested a lot of time, energy, cash resources into this in order to make sure that Floridians are really becoming aware.
So that's the target, Floridians.
Well, Floridians are a key target for sure. I mean, here we are in Miami, you know, the biggest city in Florida with huge cultural influence on the rest of the state. But, you know, Americans generally are the audience. Americans are going to be watching the Super Bowl, and they're hopefully going to be picking up on this message about marine debris, about trash, about marine wildlife, about climate change and sea level rise. Florida and Miami in particular is on the forefront of these issues.
As you know, the 2021 Super Bowl, Super Bowl 55, also is going to be here in the Sunshine State. It's on the other coast. It's in Tampa. Do you have plans already afoot for an ocean sponsorship?
Yeah, we're having some conversations with some of the other local stakeholders, for example, the Florida Aquarium, interested in doing education and outreach to continue the message that we've developed over the past year and a half leading up to this Super Bowl to bring it to the west coast of Florida. I'm living in St. Petersburg now, so I mean that's right in my backyard.
Yeah.
So I'm hopeful that we can continue to build on this message and continue the momentum that we've gotten going so far.
So it'll be interesting for the fans, won't it, when they come to Hard Rock Stadium. What will the fan experience be like at this sustainable Super Bowl? Well, Alexander Gonzalez of WLRN has been looking into that. You might have even heard him on NPR this morning reporting about this. Alex, thanks for being with us. So what will the fan experience be like at this game when they notice some changes? What are some of the specifics?
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for having me on. First of all, I think fans are going to be surprised by the reduction in single-use plastics at Hard Rock Stadium. I mean, that's really been one of the big initiatives here that was done by the caterer that is supplying that for Hard Rock Stadium. Their goal is to reduce by 99.4% of plastics, which seems pretty ambitious. Mm-hmm. But in talking with the folks with the caterer, that's going to mean, for example, plastic cups that used to serve beer, you know, that big Super Bowl treat that a lot of fans are going to be looking forward to, is now going to be in an aluminum cup that is meant to be recycled. And I just learned actually that when they did that test run for the last home game for the Dolphins in December, fans were taking them home. So, in fact, that was a surprise for them that they're, going to reduce that waste from ending up somewhere else.
A bit of a keepsake. Now, at this Super Bowl, we're also learning that straws will not be used, and any plastic that is used will be corn-based, so it can degrade. There will also be a really robust recycling plan. The whole issue of single-use plastic straws has become a bit of a political lightning rod. What are you hearing from football fans about this piece of the plastic puzzle? I guess they won't be able to get a Coke with a straw.
Well, in conversations with the folks who are putting this on. They keep reiterating that this is something the public is demanding. I think mm-hmm. that sustainability is becoming a sort of a given in participating in events like this, and it wouldn't seem surprising to most people to have to use a paper straw when it's becoming more and more of the norm.
It's becoming more accepted. And if you're just tuning in, this is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Now, the NFL is calling all of this part of a larger green initiative they've been promoting at the Super Bowl for many years now. It just might not have been apparent to everyone. They also incorporate the food sold on game day. They send extra food out to shelters and soup kitchens. Alex, isn't that right, too?
Yes, they have also been working with the caterer to see how they can reduce that food waste. And so to keep that from ending up at a landfill or just, you know, anywhere else in the environment. And really what that's trying to do is to see how they can, again, become more sustainable and deal with any of that surplus and have it go back toward other causes.
Alex, how repeatable are some of these practices beyond the Super Bowl for other kind of large public events?
So in the case of the aluminum cups, they're planning to keep that going beyond the Super Bowl. That's a plan that's they're expecting to serve University of Miami, college football games, any other large-scale events at Hard Rock Stadium. They're going to try to keep that going as much as possible because they have seen that, it's not just, marketing and raising awareness for the stadium, but it's also an effort to kind of keep that from ending up in the oceans, as JP was mentioning earlier.
Yeah, JP, plastics is a real tangible piece mm-hmm. of the environmental message here, certainly, and one that can be present along the shoreline and other waterways here in Florida. How are you going to measure success, though, of your messaging, right? I mean, a beer advertisement or a car insurance advertisement is going to know when the phone rings or when the website clicks on. How is the Ocean Conservancy going to measure its return on this investment?
Right. Well, so every year, 8 million metric tons of plastic go into the ocean worldwide, and that's the equivalent of a dump truck full of plastic every second of every minute of every day year round. So it's a huge amount. And so the question is how do we actually assess that plastic that's going into the water? And how do we know that we're meeting our targets? We've set a target of 54 tons to be removed from South Florida waterways because it's the 54th Super Bowl, sort of a symbolic figure. And we've met and exceeded that, actually.
So that's taking plastic that's already out there.
Correct.
Along the shoreline out.
Yeah. And so we have a variety of ways of actually calculating our impact. One way is by use of our Clean Swell app. It's an application for your iPhone or Android phone. You put it, you can log the actual debris that you're removing during a cleanup, and you can weigh it, and you can determine what's actually being removed. And we can get a full catalog of what types of debris are out there and the amount. So, for example, in Florida, the number one item picked up last year was cigarette butts from Florida beaches, which are inherently a little form of plastic cellulose acetate. So there's plastics on the beaches that, of all sorts, and, plastics are the top 10 items that are picked up on Florida beaches.
That are picked up on the beaches. Alex Gonzalez, the NFL is a fairly conservative company, but as you've been reporting, they're responding to the demands of consumers. Corporate America is increasingly moving in this direction, and that includes the NFL, right?
Yeah, Melissa, as you mentioned, the NFL has been one of the, I think it is the first sporting major sports league to have this sort of sustainability arm called NFL Green. They've been doing this for about a quarter of a century now. And part of that is to do these kinds of things, whether it's partnering with a local host committee to, make sure that more trees are planted and reduce kind of the carbon footprint of a stadium. Because as you've pointed out, you have people coming in, tens of thousands and millions participating in not only just the Super Bowl, but Super Bowl adjacent events that where a lot of food waste can be generated. You've got the plastics. And so this has been ongoing for a while now.
It's Miami this year. It'll be Tampa next year. And it'll be fascinating, certainly, to watch kind of the tale of the ocean partnership and the ocean environment sponsorship and see how that may play outside of Florida. Alexander Gonzalez, a producer with us here at WLRN. J.P. Brooker, Senior Manager and Policy Counsel for Ocean Conservancy's Florida Conservation Program. To both of you, have a great Super Bowl Sunday.
Thank you so much.
Thank
Big
you,
fan
Tom.
Of the show. Thanks. Thanks.
Enjoy that 7-layer dip, Tom. That's the most popular appetizer in Florida at the Super Bowl. The Florida Roundup comes to you from WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville, WLRN Public Media in Miami. Denise Royal and Heather Schatz are producers.
all the guacamole you can eat. Jason Zafka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming, also our technical director this hour. Our Director of Radio Operations is Peter Meritz. Engineering help is received from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Brady Corum. Our theme music provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for being with us. Have a great weekend.